You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond, solar-powered, grassroots, people-powered community radio. And welcome to 2012. This is my first time on the air this year. And it's an exciting time to be alive.
You know what? It's a good day for solar power because the sun is shining.
The sun is shining here in Iowa, and winter seems to have forgotten us.
Yes.
and then, what'd you say? That means
somebody says to me, well, you know what that means? And I said, no. And he said, snow in July.
Hey, you know what? Snow in July is not all bad.
No, it's true. As hot as it gets in July.
Yeah, we could use a little snow in July.
Interesting.
So we're getting the weather a little mixed up here, and we're loving it. Because we're just accepting what we can't change.
That's right.
Which is kind of the theme of our show today, isn't
That's right.
it?
Right. This book is Patience, the Art of Peaceful Living.
And the author is Alan Lokos, who is joining us from New York. He's the founder and guiding teacher of the Community Meditation Center in New York City. Also the author of Pocket Peace, Effective Practices for Enlightened Living. And he's taught at New York Insight Meditation Center, many other places, and has studied with a number of renowned teachers. Earlier in his life, in this life,
he was
a professional singer appearing in the original Broadway productions of Oliver and Pickwick. Welcome to Writers' Voices, Alan.
Thank you so much, and I just want you to know I'm not envious. I'm here in New York City, and it's a balmy 47 degrees.
Okay, well, it's clear across the country then.
We're spreading the joy.
Yeah. Right.
Oh gosh. So you were a Broadway star. That's really interesting.
Well, I was on Broadway. I don't know if I would qualify as a star, but. You know, sometimes when people hear that I was in the original Broadway company of Oliver, they say, wow, and he's still alive.
Well, how old were you?
How long ago that was.
How old were you when you played?
Well, actually, I was the youngest adult. You know, there are children in the cast of Oliver. Mm-hmm. Oliver Twist himself, the Artful Dodger, and a whole cast of little boys. But I was the youngest adult. I was just out of school, so I was about 23 at the time. Quite an experience.
Yes, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was.
Now, it's interesting because when I read the introduction to Patience, the Art of Peaceful Living, I found it, your introduction really pulled me in because you're very personal. It's a very personal story about how you came to write this book, and I appreciate that. And you actually talk about that. Do you want to share that a little bit with us?
Sure. You know, we can even back up a little before that. When my previous book was published, which was now almost 2 years ago, it's a book called Pocket Peace. The next day, literally, I had phone calls from friends saying, okay, what are you going to write next? And I found myself saying, almost without thinking about it, that I wanted to write about patience. I didn't really know at the time what I wanted to write about patience, but I just had the sense that I wanted to write about patience. So I started answering that question by saying patience. And every time I said to someone, I'm thinking about writing patience, the response was always the same. Oh, I could really use that book. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, if everybody's saying that, that's going to be good for book sales, if nothing else.
And, right.
You know, maybe I could actually offer something into the world that is essentially an impatient place. So it was on my mind, and I would discuss that at home with my wife from time to time. And then, as you alluded to in the introduction to the book, one night she was the one who said, I think off the top of her head, she said, just about any unkind word I have ever spoken or any unkind deed I have ever done could have been avoided if I had been more patient. And when she said that, I was just stunned, and I thought immediately, wow, that's true for me as well. And then I thought, well, if two people here are sitting there thinking the same thing, it's not just the two of us. There would be millions and millions of people who could say the same thing. If I had only been a bit more patient, I wouldn't have done that which hurt myself and hurt another, perhaps, and I wouldn't have spoken unkindly those words that I later regretted and wished I could have taken back. So right at that moment, I said to my wife, just excuse me for a minute, and I literally ran to my computer, and I wrote that line down, the words that she had said. And then I had to practice patience because I really wanted to keep on writing and really start writing that book right at that moment. But, you know, that would have been rude to just leave her there with the dinner dishes. So,
yes.
And the next day, really, I started working on this book and doing my research, something that's not, or I don't know, I don't remember if it's mentioned in the book, but I sent out several thousand questionnaires to people all across the country of all ages, ethnicities, interests, livelihoods. And I asked them just two questions in this questionnaire. The first was, under what circumstances are you most likely to lose your patience? And the second question was, what do you do about it? And do you know, the first thing I learned from this was that most people just didn't want to talk about it. I got back, instead of getting back thousands of responses, I got back hundreds, which fortunately was enough to begin to put together certain patterns and see certain trends in terms of our relationship to patience and impatience and anger. But it was surprising to me that people really essentially didn't want to talk about it. They certainly didn't want to see what made them impatient put into writing, even though I said I wouldn't use anyone's names. So that was the beginning, the inspiration, and then the beginning of my research.
Well, I'm curious as to how you knew who to send it to, who to send this questionnaire to, these thousands of...
How did I know who to send it to?
Yeah.
I started with family and friends and then asked them to supply me with names of other people. And I have a pretty big Twitter following, plus email lists, and I sent them out.
Okay. I mean, I wouldn't know where to begin if I was going to do that.
You mean if you had to answer that question?
Or no, she had to contact a thousand people, thousands of people to ask.
What about that question now that we have two of you right there? Can I put you on the spot?
Ah, okay.
It's already written. Don't worry about it getting into print.
Right.
No, it's just going to get recorded for all time.
See? Well, how about something that wasn't too personal?
Okay, repeat the question.
Under what circumstances are you most likely to lose your patience?
For me, it is... it's a situation where I don't have any... There's nothing I can do to change things. Because if I can change things, then I don't get impatient. I just do what needs to be done.
Right,
but if there's
right.
nothing I can do, then I'm more likely to be impatient. And I'm particularly impatient if I'm in a hurry and the person that I'm depending on to do something is moving, in my opinion, really slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you may or may not be happy to hear this, but that's essentially... what the primary answer was that came back, it was stated in a number of ways. You said it in terms of not having any control over a situation. People stated that as feeling that they were not being heard or that they were not being seen or that they just didn't count. a sense that they were invisible. And by extension, what we see is that the person who feels that they have no control in the situation. And then other points that were raised often were fatigue. In other words, if I am tired, I tend to lose my patience.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm hungry, I tend to lose my patience.
Right.
But, of course, fatigue and hunger we can do something about.
Right.
So that's not really so much a matter of control.
Yeah,
you would have been right in there with the rest of the population. Shall, of course, but in with the others.
Well, that makes sense. We're all human, and we are kind of all
We're all in
similar.
This together, and nobody gets out alive. You know?
We are all in the soup together.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. I'm probably most impatient with myself because I tend to have plans to do things, projects and so forth, and then I don't do them. And that
Well, you'll be happy to know that one of the very first chapters in the book Patience is Patience with Self.
Uh-huh.
Which again would suggest you're not the only one. I mean, I can attest to that personally.
Now, Alan, as you started writing the book and you sent out this questionnaire, but then the book includes a lot of wisdom from other teachers. How did you go about gathering that?
Well, the primary source would be what we call the ancient wisdom teachings, leaning very much on the teachings of the Buddha, as one example, from some 2,500 years ago. And they're presented in the book at the end of each chapter in the form of a contemplation, something to think about that would be very much related to the chapter that one has just finished reading. And there is an enormous wealth of material. In the Buddhist teaching, there is a very strong leaning toward the importance of patience that I actually didn't find as much in other spiritual paths or religions. I don't talk about it often, but I'm also an interfaith minister, and there's not anything wrong with that. That's not why I'm talking about it. My primary work is more in the area of teaching and writing. But I am familiar with a lot of the teachings of other spiritual paths, and it's in Buddhism that we really find a strong emphasis on patience. And the reason seems to be that any spiritual path, any spiritual practice is going to be challenged in our daily lives quite frequently. And it's going to take patience with ourselves in order to be able to deal with that. It's going to take patience with other people, very often the people who are closest to us, be it husband, wife, partner, our children, the people closest to us in the workplace. So without a depth of patience, spiritual practice is going to be challenged. Now, what I mean when I say that spiritual practice is challenged, we don't notice it when we're sitting in a church or a temple or on our meditation cushion, but when we go out into the world and we get into a traffic jam or someone cuts us off on the highway or we find ourselves waiting on an endless line at the supermarket because the person in front of us realizes they didn't bring enough cash and now they're looking for their credit card and they're just, I'm just sure I had that credit card with me. Now, where is that? You know, I always have my credit card with me. I don't understand where it is. Maybe someone took it out of my... and on it goes. And you've had a long day at work and you just wanted to stop in and pick up a few groceries for dinner tonight and you can easily become impatient.
Right.
Hopefully you don't say something or act in a way that would not be representative of the person you want to be. But unless we have really worked on and developed a depth of patience, we may find ourselves saying and doing things that we really would rather not.
You know, one thing I've found that helps in that type of situation, for me, that's the type of situation where I would be impatient, would tend to be impatient, and it was because I'm wasting my time. And, you know, time is so precious and so forth. Well, now I have a smartphone, which means even if I just have a couple minutes, I can do something productive while I'm waiting, and then I don't get as impatient.
That's right. I mean, you know, let's be grateful for technology, and we can, you know, interesting point is that I felt that technology is so much a part of our lives now that I actually wrote a chapter about patience with technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing is that your smartphone and my iPhone and our iPads and our computers, they're miraculous devices.
Oh, yeah.
But they also seem to know the exact moment when they shouldn't break down.
And that's when they do?
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
And that can really try our patience.
Yeah.
So, I did want to speak about patience with technology in the book because it's so prevalent in the workplace. And I think that we put expectations on ourselves, and I think others put expectations on us because we should be able to accomplish so much with these technological miracles. As to your waiting online in the supermarket and going to your smartphone, it's a good use of the phone. But I wonder also what would happen if you didn't have the phone with you and you were standing online. Is there anything productive that you could do for yourself, within yourself, in those moments when you were stuck waiting?
Oh, yes, there is.
You can pray.
Sorry to bring it up. But,
yeah, you can pray.
Prayer is wonderful. Contemplation,
mm-hmm.
Simply looking. You know, here's a thought. The person who is searching around for that credit card because he or she didn't have enough money with them, they're going through a rather difficult moment.
Yes.
We're not the only ones who are dealing with that situation. They might be embarrassed. They feel stress in that moment. And it could happen to us. We could be in that same situation. So when we shift our emphasis and we become aware of what's going on within ourselves, not just the fact that some annoyance has come up for us and some impatience has come up for us, but what else is going on? Can I find something within that just might have a little compassion for the person in front of us? They're going through a difficult moment. I'm not saying that that's easy to do. You know, we tend to experience everything, you know, as a friend of mine says, we experience the world as I am the center of the universe. Everything revolves around me.
It's all about me.
Yeah, and it can seem that way because the experience of life is happening within me. But, of course, it's also happening within everyone else. And the problem with that view that I am the center of the universe is that there is not one other being on this earth who agrees with me.
Yeah.
Guess who they think is the center of the universe? And, of course, you know, that sounds a little facetious, but there really is something to that our perception is that the world is happening to me. And with work and with looking at what's going on within us, we can begin to open up a sense of spaciousness that that sees and realizes exactly what we said kind of jokingly before. We're all in this soup together, and we are very, very much connected. We can't do this by ourselves, whatever the this is that each of us is doing, whether it's in the workplace or at home or even raising a child. We can't do this by ourselves. If we need a new shirt or a new blouse and we go to the store, there will be shirts and blouses from which we can choose. Somebody made those. A lot goes into everything that we tend to take for granted. But we're in this together. We are connected. And it's just always going to be that way. So we might as well find some way to get along with everybody, because we're kind of stuck with each other.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Alan Locos, the author of Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living, published by Tarcher Penguin. And I'm going to read a little bit from the back cover about this book. According to Locos, to develop a depth of patience, we must first acknowledge the unhappiness caused by our impatience and anger in its many manifestations, from mild annoyance to rage. In this revelatory book, Locos draws on his many years as a Buddhist practitioner and spiritual teacher, as well as interviews with a wide range of individuals who have had their patience tested, often dramatically so, and lays out a compelling path to the heart of patience. And one of the things that strikes me about this, and it's a subtle point, but sometimes we miss this, in that patience, you know, patience is a virtue. That's maybe a cliche or something, but that's
true.
But like any other virtue, the benefit of practicing that virtue is not because you then get to call yourself virtuous. The benefit is, you know, the benefit of the virtue is not the virtue itself, it's the effect that it has on you. So being virtuous makes you happy.
Mm-hmm.
Being patient increases your own well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you've touched on such an important point. You just read from the back cover. May I ask you to turn to the front? She read that so well, I want to ask you to read some.
Sure.
Front and go, just go a couple of pages in and find the quote from Aristotle that happens just before the actual writing of the book.
Got it. This inquiry...
Can you read that for us?
Sure. This inquiry does not seek theoretical knowledge, for we are inquiring not to understand virtue, but to become virtuous. Otherwise, our inquiry shall have been of little use. We look to examine the nature of actions, specifically how we are to do them, for this determines the very nature of character that evolves.
Yes, and I think that's exactly what you said. I mean, Aristotle might have said it before you, but, you know, so
yes,
what?
Yes, yeah. He might have said it better. But
well, you know, they translate these things and they make them sound good. But I liked what you said, and I think it's just right on target. Patience is a virtue, but we really shouldn't look at it as, in my view, as something that we should be. I should be patience.
Right.
Be patient, rather. Who said so? You know, why be patient if you do not experience the benefits of being patient? Now, it turns out for most of us, and I have not known an exception to this, that a loss of patience usually doesn't feel very good. Loss of patience, of course, becomes impatient, and really begins to live in the same neighborhood with anger.
Right.
And, you know, this just simply can be problematic. Plus the fact that, you know, it sounds to me like you've spent some time with this book. So, you know that early on, I ask people to just take a couple of minutes. I think the way I laid this out was for 1 week, just take 5 minutes a day. You know, it can be 4 minutes or 3 minutes. And just sit down with yourself and ask yourself, why do you want to become more patient? Why do you want to become a patient person? And if you find the only reasons are because I should, or because my wife tells me I should, it's not going to be enough. If you really want to become a patient person, it is going to take work. You know, a phrase that I use a number of times in the book is, it takes patience to become patient. It takes patience to develop patience. Now, you know, before one even gets into that, there are many things that one can do to really help oneself, but I think we all know them. You know, the usual kind of skills, I refer to them as skillful means, the take a deep breath, count to 10 kind of skills. Mm-hmm. And we all know those, and they can be very valuable. You know, if you take a deep breath, what you're really doing is you're stopping what's going on in the moment. And that kind of stop, that kind of pause, there's an expression that I use, I call that a sacred pause, because you could be saving a relationship in that pause. You could even be saving a life in that pause. You know the expression, a crime of passion?
Yes, of course.
How many people occupy prison cells in our country because they committed a crime of passion?
Mm-hmm. A single moment.
Yeah. And I actually describe that in the book. It's very real. And any of us who think, oh, I could never do something like that, that's a dangerous thought. And I'm not saying each of us is, you know, a powder keg about to explode. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that
with the right provocation,
under the right circumstances,
yeah. Yes.
And the right buttons getting pushed, we can lose it.
Absolutely.
So I think that we want to, I mean, those of us who choose to do this, we want to go beyond those skills, those basic skills of being able to stop for a moment and breathe, and just explore whether it is worthwhile for us individually to do the actual work to become one who is a patient person. The patient person doesn't have to remind himself or herself to stop and breathe. The patient person has become patient to the level where
they can
absorb more. There's enough spaciousness to take things in, to be able to see things as they really are, to allow, to forgive. Now, that does not mean to become a doormat. I think that's one of the mistakes that people make when they think about patience. They think of it as being passive. It's not passive at all. Real patience is very active. And it's very present. Mm-hmm. And a person who is patient knows what they're doing. They've developed compassion. They've developed wisdom. And by balancing compassion and wisdom, they see that patience is just what makes the most sense.
You make a very interesting point. Actually, you're quoting, I think, towards the back of the book about compassion or reacting to other people.
I hope I'm quoting myself.
I'm trying to find it now, but
she looks for that. I want to say something. Okay, going back to the supermarket line. When I said prayer, I'm sending positive thoughts to that person who is having difficulty, and whether it's a parent with a screaming child, or the person who can't find their money.
Yes,
I'm sending positive thoughts to them to be calm, to work through it, not to be upset, and that's helping me not be impatient.
Yes, there's actually a specific practice. that you will find in the book. It's called, the Sanskrit word for it is metta, M-E-T-T-A.
Mm-hmm.
And metta is translated, it's actually very difficult to translate many terms from Sanskrit to English for the usual reasons that translations are difficult, but also it was a different alphabet, etc. But essentially, metta means loving friendliness or loving kindness or unbounded kindness. And exactly as you said, it is exactly that practice, to offer thoughts, silent thoughts, of friendliness, of kindness to other beings. And there's actually a formal practice that one uses. You know, if one goes on a meditation retreat, you might spend a week actually with this practice of metta. It starts with oneself. You know, if one learns this practice, there's a system of thoughts that one offers for oneself. May you be safe, may you be happy, or starting with oneself, may I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I live with a sense of ease, may I live in peace. And then we move to other beings, usually starting with those that would be easiest for us. Someone who has been always there for us, maybe in the sense of a benefactor, and we offer those same thoughts, and then perhaps to a loved one, and then to what we call a neutral person. This is a little tricky. This is someone who we see fairly regularly, but we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the person from whom we buy our newspaper in the morning, or our cup of coffee, or someone in a class, or someone who comes into the store regularly, but we don't really know them. But we offer them these thoughts of friendliness anyway. And then the practice gets quite challenging because we bring to mind someone with whom we're not getting along all that well. And we find a way to offer thoughts of kindness for them as well. It's an incredible practice. Not necessarily easy to do, but it came to mind because it's exactly what you said. When you're standing online and you offer prayer for the person who's having difficulty.
Yeah. There's another technique, too, that goes with breathing. You breathe in peace, breathe out distress.
Yes.
Breathe in hope, breathe out despair.
Yes.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Alan Locos, author of Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living. Alan, you talked about a patient person is not a doormat, and often I think people have the idea that if someone is doing something that is harmful or distressing to you, that if you don't react to it or don't respond, you're letting them get away with it in some sense, or, you know, and being a doormat or allowing yourself to be walked upon or something. And so we feel like it's our responsibility to respond and not let that person get away with that. But that's why I found very interesting, this is a quote, I believe, from Shantideva, the 8th century Indian Buddhist philosopher that you have quite a section in the book about, who says, if it is the nature of unskillful beings to cause harm to others, being angry with them would be pointless. It would be like resenting fire for burning.
Mm.
If, however, it is the nature of sentient beings to be good and wholesome, it would still be pointless to be angry at them for their momentary faults. It would be like resenting the sky for the falling rain.
It's amazing teaching, isn't it?
Yes.
It is,
yeah.
Really.
If people are bad, then being angry at them is pointless, and if people are good, being angry at them is pointless.
We have always heard that that when you keep anger inside toward another person or toward a situation, you're only hurting yourself.
Right.
And I can see that reading your. I can see that very clearly. That you know. You approach that in different ways, but it's very true.
But that's something that does need to be brought up, because being patient doesn't mean stuffing the feelings. Do you want to address
that? We do not ever really want to repress feelings. And in truth, we can't stop feelings from coming up. It's you know, it is the nature of mind to experience thoughts, feelings, and sensations. That's mm-hmm. essentially what's happening all the time to us. Mm-hmm. If you even just stop for a moment now and just take a look inside of what's going on in the mind, you'll see that, and for your listeners too, this would be great because they're hearing a lot of ideas, and we have a judgmental mind, agree, disagree, I like this, I don't like this, I'm so glad they had this guest on, oh, why did they have this guest? And that's all absolutely normal and natural. But what the advanced practitioner, the experienced person, does is they're able to see that those are just thoughts and feelings. We don't have to believe everything we think. So right. What comes up, we look and we can say, oh, isn't that interesting how I just tended to agree with that person as soon as I heard his voice, or how, oh, I didn't like her as soon as I saw her, and realize that we have no information whatsoever, and we form these judgments. Mm-hmm. Now, when we can look that way, and then we relate this back to what you were pointing out about, we're not here to be a doormat. We're here to live this life to its fullest extent. To be patient means that we can be in a situation and realize what is arising within us, which might be impatience, it might be anger, and to realize that those are feelings. I don't want to take action based on feelings that are coming up, because those feelings are absolutely impermanent. They will arise, and if I just watch them, they will die away. By the way, science now is showing, you know, they do these experiments where they hook up these diodes to people's heads and they watch what's going on in the brain, and they seem to say now that a thought that arises, if we don't attach to it and we just watch it, its life will be about 1.2 seconds. A feeling that arises and we don't attach to it, and we don't go off with our add-ons and writing our scenarios about it, its lifespan is just over 3 seconds. So we then say, well, how can that be true? Because I was just annoyed all day long. You know, it's like, that's a lot more than 1.2 seconds. We have that experience of being annoyed all day long because of what we write that we add on to the feeling. We write our story.
Ah, yes.
We not write our story. It's about me. What's more interesting to me than me? So I write my story. I write my script. This person who I felt was rude to me, how could he do that? You know, he's always rude. I don't understand how Janet stays married to him. I mean, he's such a boor. On and on and on. And exactly as you said, we're carrying that inside of us.
Yeah.
Is that an intelligent thing to do?
No.
So we look back, and a lot of the emphasis in the book Patience is about looking at what our experience actually is, what's going on within, so that we don't react in our conditioned ways, we don't respond in a knee-jerk fashion, but we really look. Now, when we do that, then we can see clearly, this is not fair, this is not right, this is unjust, this can be harmful, I will now take action. But that is action that has been considered. It is action that can be grounded in compassion and wisdom. But it also might be the kind of action that says, this particular person needs to be taken out of society because he or she harms other people. He has committed these crimes. We have now found him. and we take that person out of society. But we want to do that not out of getting revenge or getting even or from spite.
Or punishment.
Do it because it is the right thing to do for the benefit of all beings.
Yeah.
It's very different.
Well, Alan, another one of the profiles that you have in the book of Metteia, I don't know if that's how it's pronounced.
That's the right pronunciation, okay. Yes.
That where he talks about how when you react to something, you may have really good reason to be upset about something or to be angry or somebody did something that was wrong, but if you react to it negatively, you're the one who loses the time.
Exactly.
That reaction costs. He yes. says, no matter whose fault it is, it's me who's losing the time, it's me who's losing this precious human life, it's not wise to act so emotionally. And I have to share a story here because my father passed away when I was 22, I think. And the last conversation I had with him on the phone, I had had an incident with a landlady and that was very, very upsetting to me. And I called Mom, but she wasn't there. and I wasn't, you know, even though I was only 22, I wasn't one who called home all that often or called
no.
for advice
no.
very much at all. But I was just really, really upset about this. And so since Dad was the only one who was there, I told him what had happened. And he said, if you let her make you angry, you've given her power over you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was the last conversation I had with my father.
Well, he left you with an incredible bit of wisdom, didn't he?
He did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
and one way that the Buddha is reported to have taught that was when we hold on to anger, it is as if we pick up a hot coal with the intention of throwing it at someone.
Uh-huh.
But who is it who's getting burned?
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you have a point here about being patient during an argument. We hear what we want to hear many times, don't we? Not actually what's said. You say, stop and ask the other person if you have heard them correctly, then repeat the words you heard, not your interpretation. And that's a really good point, I think.
Yes, you know, I think that we accomplish a number of things when we do that. Now, again, that doesn't mean that every time we're having a casual conversation that we stop and ask the other person, did I hear you correctly? Did you say such and such?
Right.
It means that you become more aware of when within you agitation is beginning to stir, when you are beginning to sense impatience. And, you know, for most of us, unless we've really practiced, as we start to become impatient, we turn it up. We turn up and we begin to strike back, and then the other person strikes back, and it doesn't take long before things have become quite unpleasant. But if we want, you know, if we really want to advance as a human being and become, you know, I use this terminology a lot, a more compassionate and wise being, we look inside and we sense that we're starting to become annoyed. And that's a time when we can use that teaching that you just referred to and to say to the other person, now, did I hear you say? And then we repeat exactly what we heard, not our interpretation of what we heard. And what happens is that we have really, again, created a pause mm-hmm. in this build-up that's happening of unpleasantness. We repeat what we heard. Now, the other person can say, yes, you heard me correctly. Or they can say, no, that's not exactly what I heard, what I said. Or the other great thing that happens is if you do repeat accurately what the other person said, they might realize that they didn't say exactly what they intended to say.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah.
And that gives them an opportunity to say, You know, that really didn't come out exactly the way I intended. Let me rephrase that.
Uh-huh. Now, Alan, over the years, I have often, and usually, I think, kind of practiced the idea of not expressing emotions right away because feelings pass, and I don't want to say something that tomorrow isn't what I meant. You know, isn't mm-hmm. like I might mean it right now when I say it, but I know that tomorrow I'm not going to feel the same way, and so I prefer not to say anything. But sometimes in relationships, the other person hasn't been very happy about that. They feel like I'm holding back or I'm not being real or something. You know, it's or being passive aggressive or something by basically refusing to engage on that level. Do you have any suggestions for that?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question that you bring up. I think it's fine to begin, in a situation like that, to begin a sentence by saying, I feel, and then look for exactly what it is that you're feeling. Now, that doesn't mean that you say to the other person, I feel you're a jerk.
Even if you do.
That you look for what you're feeling. You might say, well, I'm beginning to feel angry here, so maybe I'd like to just stop for a minute. And you know, if you look at the back of the book, Patience, you'll see this long, long list that goes on for several pages of what I called I feel words. Because when we want to actually express how we feel and we're feeling a bit annoyed or agitated, it can sometimes be difficult to find the word that accurately expresses what we're feeling. So I recommend for those who choose to read this book that they spend some time with that list so that those words kind of become familiar. They're not all going to become familiar because there's over 300 of them, if I remember correctly. But that would help in this situation. I feel. Now, one thing about being in touch with what you're feeling is that that is where you are an absolute authority. It's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Someone cannot come back then and say to you, no, that's not what you feel.
That's right.
Or if they do, they're inaccurate. But, of course, the practice is to really learn, what am I really feeling? I'm feeling annoyed. And, you know, you're not saying a terrible thing when you say this to someone else. Annoyance, agitation, fear, anger, they are just feelings. Now, that when I say that, let me make clear that I'm not saying, when I say just feelings, I'm not saying that feelings are unimportant. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that a feeling is a feeling. A feeling is not reality.
Right.
I'm going to go back to the slightly unpleasant phrase I used. If I say, Jim is a jerk. Now, I say that with a tone that suggests I really know that this person, Jim, is really a jerk. But the truth is, Jim is probably not a jerk. Ask Jim. Right?
And if Jim is a jerk, it's probably because he has some real issues and you guys should feel sorry for him.
Well, maybe so. But I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that my perception is that Jim is a jerk. That is not make reality.
Right.
It is simply my perception. Now, it's probably going to be much, much better to say to Jim, I'm really feeling annoyed here. Let's stop for a minute. Or let me tell you why I'm feeling annoyed. You know, we had an appointment for 3 o'clock. I had these other people ready to be here. And you showed up at 3:45. And frankly, you've done that often with me. And I feel that you don't respect my time when you do that. And I feel annoyed. And there's a way that I'm saying that I'm trying to demonstrate right now, that is not making accusations. It's telling Jim what I'm feeling. I'm feeling annoyed. I'm feeling not seen and not heard. I'm feeling as if my feelings don't matter, and I want to express this to you. And now I would like to give you an opportunity, Jim, to respond to that.
And to change
very
his behavior.
Very different than saying, hey, you idiot, you're always late. Jim is not always late.
Right.
He's probably late fairly often. But we've just gone into an area that simply isn't true. And the reason I said what I said before about where you are an authority is that you are an authority about what you are feeling.
Yes.
And you realize that it is your feelings. And just as you said, that was so important, those feelings will pass.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Alan Locos, author of Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living. And we were going to have Alan read from the book, but I'm afraid we're not going to have time.
Well, I wanted to
Mom
point
still
out,
has more questions.
You know, actually, I wanted to point
because then everybody gets to read for themselves.
That's right.
Actually, I wanted to point out that this is a workbook because there, at the end of each section, is a patience practices at the end of each chapter to help easily incorporate lessons into daily life, and chapter contemplations that help put the chapter's teachings into perspective. And also profiles in patients, which are examples of real people who've overcome major challenges to patients in their lives. So, see, that's why this book is so neat, because it isn't just a bunch of his ideas. You can actually put these things into practice.
Now, Alan, how did you determine how this book was going to be structured? It seems like a lot of thought went into that.
You hit on something that was a major issue for me. When I wrote my previous book, which is called Pocket Peace, there was an automatic structure right there. I based it on a 10-part Buddhist teaching called the Paramitas, or the Parami, depending on which translation. And there are 10 parts to that teaching. So when I began to look at patience, somewhere in my mind must have been the idea that I need a structure first in order to begin writing. Mm. And so I would look for this structure or that structure, and then I was trying to fit what I wanted to write into that structure. And it was like trying to get your feet into shoes that are a size too small. None of it was working. And I would say that I probably did that maybe for as much as 3 months.
Wow.
And finally, it came to me that it wasn't going to happen this way. What I needed to do was to just start writing. And if a structure emerged out of that, the structure would tell me what it was going to be. And as soon as I did that, everything began to flow. The obvious place to start, as I think we mentioned before, was patience with oneself, because so many of us, you know, we're always dealing with ourselves. So when impatience arises, it can certainly be right there within us. And from there, I went to patience in our relationships. But just to back up to self for a moment, what are some of the areas that cause us to be impatient with ourselves? Could be the body, this body in which I am experiencing life in this lifetime. Maybe I'm influenced by all of these fashion magazines, and I think I'm too heavy, I'm too slim, I'm too tall, I'm too short, this isn't big enough, this isn't small enough, and I'm impatient with the body. And it's unfortunate that society feeds that to us. You know, wear this and everyone will love you, put on this perfume, buy this car, and somehow it doesn't really sit well with us, and we try it anyway, and I'm still impatient. So patience with self, patience with the aging body, all the attempts to get us to look young. I already did look young. I did that years ago.
Right.
I've earned these wrinkles.
Right, absolutely.
No, and I want to enjoy this aging process because, as far as I know, I might only get to do it once. I don't want to be, you know, going to the finish line just fighting.
Going down fighting.
That's really where I started. And then, of course, we live life in relation with others. Whether we actually have a life partner or not, we're always in relation with someone and with something. So I spoke in the chapter about relationships, intimacy, and, of course, children, because if anyone can try our patience, it's our wonderful, loved children.
Absolutely.
And then we've been speaking quite a bit today about the words that we speak. That was an important part of patience, the words that we speak, the words that are spoken to us. And most of us need to have a way in which we earn our livelihood so that we support ourselves and our families. And patience is very often required in the workplace. Mm-hmm. I happen to call that chapter At the Water Cooler. Because a lot happens around the water cooler that requires patience. The relationships that we have in the workplace are not equal relationships. That they can't be by nature. One person is in charge and the others follow. In our personal relationships, we look to develop equal relationships. So the workplace is different.
Absolutely.
And then you had mentioned the chapter of Shanti Deva's teaching, the 8th century philosopher and scholar. He had so much to offer about patience that I wanted to use his words and to comment on his words. And then the final chapter was intended to tie this all together and take the reader who really wanted to advance into becoming, as I said, a truly patient person. The last chapter, which is the subtitle of the book, The Art of Peaceful Living, looks at the practice of mindfulness, developing insight, and then ultimately that patience be a way of life.
Well, Alan, we've had a wonderful conversation today, and we are out of time.
Oh, darn.
Darn.
Yes, yeah. And we highly recommend this book.
Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living by Alan Locos is available from your local bookstore. You can order it if they don't carry it now, or, of course, online from any of the wonderful
And it's as new as
there.
It can be because it was only published yesterday.
Oh,
yeah.
Congratulations,
that's right.
Alan.
Yeah, I did note that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us on Writer's Voices, and
absolutely,
stay
my pleasure.
Tuned.
It's been really fun.
And Caroline's got some words of parting words of wisdom from the book for us
from
today.
The book. Wisdom evolves from seeing things as they are, and patience comes from accepting things as they are. If a situation is unacceptable and we can do something to change it, we should do so. Otherwise, it is wise to accept life's conditions.
See you next week on Writer's Voices. Stay tuned now for Planet Earthwild with James Moore.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.